Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today AJ Howell Williams, who's the Director of Transfer, Athletics, and International Admission at Santa Clara University. Now, we had Santa Clara on the podcast back on episode 66, where AJ's colleague, Becky Conowicz, was with us. But today, we welcome AJ. AJ, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Doing good. It's finally kind of cooled off a little bit out here in California for like a day. I think it's about to jump back up to 90, but we're good.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. It must be great to be in California, sunny California, and it's great to have you here again, AJ. So let's get right to it. Can you provide an overview of Santa Clara University's most distinctive academic programs and what makes them unique compared to similar programs at other institutions?
Sure. Well, you know, and this is one of those areas or one of those questions that we get where, you know, I kind of tell folks, look, if a university has an English program, it's probably similar to another university's English program, right? That kind of thing. But the reality is, I think, you know, our location might help sort of distinguish our programs and what's available to students, you know, through them, in part because we're in the Silicon Valley, right? We're in Northern California, within minutes from, you know, some major cities, you know, a smaller town and a smaller town feel sort of in San Jose and all that. But, you know, when you hear that term Silicon Valley, that's where we are. So while we are known for, you know, engineering and business, law at the graduate level, most of our students are actually in the College of Arts and Sciences. So, you know, strong programs in biology, political science, communication, you know, programs like that. And so in terms of sort of distinctive offerings at Santa Clara, we have three centers of distinction, right? Because we are a Jesuit school. And so for folks who aren't aware, you know, the Jesuits are, you know, founded in a deep belief in social justice, doing for others, answering those larger societal, global questions and issues and things like that. And so we have a, you know, Marcula Center for Ethics, which is, if not singular, it's one of a few in throughout the country. And they, you know, work with not only our undergrad and grad populations, but also local organizations and major, you know, Fortune 500 companies and things like that who want to do some trainings for their staff or just, you know, some philosophy, you know, kind of deep thought processes for their overall organization. So that's pretty cool. We literally kind of hot off the presses last week, got a notice to the university of a new minor, responsible AI, right? So AI is a hot topic right now. And, you know, again, we're kind of in the hotbed of places that are engineering all that. And so that's interdisciplinary. I think 20 different professors in 8 different disciplines are going to be joining together to work on that. So that's pretty cool.
That's definitely really cool. You're definitely on the cutting edge, located in Northern California, Silicon Valley, which I can only imagine the internships and opportunities for students, not only in your classrooms, but beyond. Mm-hmm. I love that new minor, responsible AI, and I look forward to hearing a lot more about it. And I'm sure it's something that many colleges and universities, if they haven't already, are certainly going to follow that lead. Now, what other opportunities for interdisciplinary studies and research are available for undergraduate students at Santa Clara? And how does the university integrate Jesuit values, which you mentioned, into its academic programs and, of course, that awesome campus life?
Yeah, well, in terms of, you know, the interdisciplinary piece, one thing I think that's important to sort of understand is that we're a medium-sized school, right? So, you know, we're split up at the undergrad level into 3 colleges, arts and sciences, business school, and then engineering. And at the graduate level, we only have 6 graduate programs. And so, you know, we're majority undergrads. We're about 6,000 undergrad, 3,000 grad. So the focus here is undergrad centric. And so we're also on the quarter system, right? And so I think the size and speed of things here allows students to you know, take a lot of different classes, right? Not only courses for your core, the major, the basics that everybody has to take, but also for a major, a minor, a second major, a minor. So we're the kind of institution where a lot of students are able to double major, major and minor, and really kind of combine any interests that they have. And so, you know, if you're in the business school or engineering, a lot easier to work with arts and sciences for a second major or minor or multiple, right? I've heard the most I've ever heard a student take on during my 18 years here, 3 majors and 3 minors, right? So that flexibility is there. And so students definitely take advantage of that. And, you know, there's a pretty cool correlation between engineers and musicians, right? For whatever reason. And so we see a lot of students who, you know, do engineering and music and that kind of thing, or folks who just want to try their hand at being in a theater production, right? That's pretty cool, but they're business majors. So yeah, the ability to sort of cross-pollinate academically is definitely there. You mentioned location.
Yep. And also the Jesuit education, the Jesuit philosophy.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, again, you know, a part of sort of being where we are, you know, which is, you know, the tech mecca for the world, if you will, and one of the more innovative and dynamic, you know, regions in the world, is that we have a lot that goes on around us and a lot that happens at a fast pace. And I think the Jesuits really kind of, it's, you know, the foundation of the education is not just we want you to be a great management major in the business school, but think ethically about how you would approach these principles. And yeah, that decision looks good for the bottom line of the company, but what does it really have? Does it have an impact for the local community, for the greater society, that kind of thing? So those kind of larger questions, you know, no one really has the answer to, but I value the fact that the Jesuits are grounded in an approach that makes folks contemplate that and think about those things, right?
Well, I love that. You know, you have that Jesuit philosophy that makes you really look deep into those ethics that you mentioned. You also talk about the fact that you're a medium-sized school with 3 schools, by the way, 1 in arts and science, your business school, and of course, engineering. You encourage that interdisciplinary study with your double majors or perhaps a major minor. You talk about the engineers who are also musicians. It really sounds like you have something for everybody on your campus. And speaking of which, your retention rate is an astonishing 93%, which is absolutely terrific, well above the national average, which is about 70%. So AJ, what are some unique aspects of campus life at Santa Clara? And perhaps can you share some of your more popular extracurricular opportunities that keep students wanting to come back after that freshman year?
Yeah. Great question. So, you know, one, I think, again, you know, it's California. So they are drawn to this area, to this region for a few reasons, right? Weather not being the least of which. And I think it's also important to know that we're a national school. So we get folks literally coming from all over the country. The Bay Area, just like I always kind of tell folks, the Bay Area, just like Southern California and New York and parts of the East Coast, one of the more diverse and mingling areas of the country. So as a university, we try to reflect that. And so, you know, it's a happy place. Folks enjoy themselves when they're here. You know, if you visit during the school year, you're going to see students who like each other, who smile when they see each other. You know, our tour guys are constantly getting harassed on the tour because they are running into folks that they know and all of that, you know? So I think one, just sort of the, one of the phrases that folks use around here, California casual, right? It's the academics, the pace of them being on the quarter system, it's going to keep you engaged, right? As where, you know, on a semester system, you might take 8 classes in an academic year. In the quarter system, you take 12 in the same amount of time, but at a quicker timetable. So academically, you got to be on top of things, right? But it's also about balance. And so, you know, our folks are out and about, they're enjoying nature. It's a pretty physically active and fit campus. Not that there's pressure to be, you know, all of that, but it's California, right? So folks take advantage of that. I literally just came from the gym, right now, you know? So yeah, it's a, I think just a fun environment. You know, our retention rate is, you know, high, is what, you know, one of the highest in the country. Our 4-year grad rate is also one of the highest in the country. And I think the size and speed of things, again, to go back to that, play into that, right? Folks come in, they figure things out, they're productive while they're here, they get out on time, and then they move on and they're pretty productive as well. So those are all good reasons, I think. The campus itself is, you know, aesthetically pretty pleasing, pretty nice place to be. Again, I've been here 18 years. I don't mind going to work, you know, so it's pretty nice.
Of course. And you talked about how your courses are run. It's not typical semesters. So could you just elaborate on that for students and parents that might be listening that are unsure of the method that you use?
Sure, sure. So, you know, I tell folks, generally speaking, I would say, you know, 4 classes usually makes a student a full-time college student, right? Mm-hmm. I would say most folks are probably, because of the way that most high schools are set up, more familiar with the semester system, 2 academic terms, you know, in a year. So you're looking at around 8 classes in a setup like that. On the quarter system, 3 academic terms, right? We don't count the summer. I don't know why they call it trimesters. It's just what it is. So you take about 12 classes. They run for 10 weeks of instruction, and then you have a week of finals. And so it is fast paced, and it keeps students on their toes. I mentally was much more of a semester system guy. I just like to take the time and all that. But I'm very impressed with our students because they, you know, within the 3rd week have tests and papers and quizzes and all that that they're preparing for. You know, it's sort of in line with this. We always get the question, what kind of student thrives at Santa Clara or does well? I would say anybody who's going to school on a quarter system is probably somebody who, you know, is a multitasker, right? And can handle quite a few things at once. You know, kind of always likes to be, you know, stimulated or engaged in some way, because I don't know any one student at Santa Clara. We've had, you know, some of our Division I athletes who work in the office who just do one thing, right? And so, you know, a lot of folks have their hands in a lot of different pies.
Well, we appreciate that. And of course, AJ, visiting campus is so important as part of the overall college process to help determine fit. So if a student is fortunate enough to visit, what are some of the must-see areas they have to visit, and what are some examples of really good questions students should ask when they visit the admissions office?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, visiting is very important if you can, right? If you can get out and walk around campuses. And one thing when it comes to that fit question is that, you know, again, I've been in the field about 20 years, right? And so I always kind of tell folks, regardless of whatever sort of publications you're looking at, U.S. News and World Report, FISC guides, whatever, what have you, you know, their job is to sort of split us all up into different categories and rank us and all that kind of stuff. In my opinion, schools fall into 1 of 3 categories: small, medium, or large.
Right.
So, you know, if you have the opportunity, and most folks do, to get out and visit schools that represent that size, do it, because then you'll get a sense of, is a liberal arts college, is that too small for me, or is it exactly what I'm looking for? You know, is a campus of 40, 50, 60,000 something that I really want, or is that too many people, you know,
right.
Or, you know, those medium-sized schools that are sort of a sweet spot in between. And so, yeah, definitely get out and visit as many campuses as you can. And I would say, you know, that sophomore, junior year, you know, if you have that flexibility to do that, you know, senior year, if you're waiting to that point, you might as well just wait to see what schools you got admitted to, and then, you know, take those efforts. But yeah, I definitely, you know, for us, we offer information sessions and campus tours throughout the school year. most Saturdays throughout the, well, I'm sorry, throughout the entire year, mm-hmm. most Saturdays throughout the school year as well. And so, you know, we don't do interviews. We really, you know, I think half the battle with us is just folks seeing the campus, because once they see it, we're up there on their lists. You know, if not number one, we're in the top five, you know? So I definitely get out there, walk around. I would say in terms of questions and all of that, it's really important, I think, to just have a sense of the school that you're visiting. Right. And do a little research on the front end. And to that point, for students who aren't able to get out and visit us because they're on a in a different part of the country or the globe, you know, after the pandemic, especially, schools went overboard with the type of online offerings that they put out there and things like that. So you can still get a sense and still demonstrate that interest, even if, you know, you're not able to physically get out to a campus. So I definitely recommend that. We're here. You know, we're not going anywhere. We're the oldest institution of higher learning in the state. Mm-hmm. Come out and see us. Come out and see us. And it's pretty good weather pretty much year round. So.
Well, those are great pieces of advice. And I also appreciate the fact that you mentioned the online offerings, because as you indicated, there's a lot of people from outside of the great state of California that are interested in Santa Clara. So again, online offering students, and you touched upon that key term, demonstrating your interest. So AJ, I just have to ask as a follow-up, is that something, demonstrating a student's interest, is that something that you track, and do you use it in any way during your admissions review?
Yeah, sure. So we definitely do. And I would say, you know, in this time of sort of increasing applications and, you know, now that said, increasing applications doesn't necessarily correlate to true interest, right? Mm-hmm. Students are simply applying right. to more and more schools. So it definitely comes into play. And I would say more so for, and these students don't even know who they are in our applicant pool, but those students who are on the bubble, those students who, you know, are maybe, yeah, we could take them, but we could also defer this student and see how they're looking, or, you know, somebody on the wait list, that kind of thing. You know, if a school's in your backyard or even not, and you're saying, hey, I really want to come here, I'm very interested, you know, and you haven't shown any inclination of, you know, the potential to enroll if admitted, then why would a university take a chance on you, you know? And so I tell students all the time, they live currently today in amazing times, right? I don't know if you had, I mean, it would have been great if we had Google growing up, right? Just information at our fingertips. You know, the students got to use it, do their research, you know? And so I think I kind of got lost in the question there, but, you know, definitely come out and, you know, visit schools and do all that.
Yeah, well, you know, you didn't get lost in the question because you raised a very important point, which is that schools are receiving far more applications than before, but it doesn't mean that every applicant is 100% interested in your institution, right? So if students demonstrate that interest and they show that they're serious, that certainly can help them in the process. And even if an institution student doesn't say that they track demonstrated interest, it's important to do so anyway, so that you're doing your own research, so that you're determining for yourself whether or not the school is indeed the right fit or not. So speaking of which, I was curious, what is the institutional goal in terms of how many freshmen you actually want to admit, and how many overall applications do you actually receive to consider for that freshman class?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll answer the question, but I'll do it in a way that I always try to, which is to give it more context, you know, and,
sure.
and really just really explain to students. And when I'm in person with, you know, families and we're giving our presentations and all that to a room full of folks, I like to go about this a different way, right? And kind of mm-hmm. go around the room mm-hmm. and poke and prod and see how stressed out folks are and all that. In part because I really like to sort of demystify this whole aspect where folks think it's rocket science. You know, you need a 4.0 GPA, you need, you know, all these crazy test scores and all that. You know, the national average admit rate for all those 2,000 plus 4-year institutions in the country has hovered for like 20 years in the 65-66% range, right? So, you know, a lot more schools admit a whole lot more students than folks realize. That term selective just means that you admit less, a university admits less than half of the students who apply. Only 20% of all the schools in the country fit that bill. But then within that, there's different layers, different strata of selectivity, right? Super selective and all that kind of stuff. So again, that goes down to, you know, students being realistic, doing their research. You know, you probably shouldn't apply to Ivies with a 2.0. You know, it right. ain't going to go well, you know. Right. And so for us, you know, we for the last few years have hovered around 19,000 applications. We look to bring in, again, for the last few years, a first year class, students right out of high school, of anywhere from, you know, 1400 to 1500, right? And that's starting to creep up a little bit. We'll also bring in around, you know, 200 to 300 transfers annually. And so, you know, and so, you know, for us, we are one of those schools that's technically selective, but, you know, our admit rate is usually in the sort of mid 40s, upper 40s, right? And I'll say that number. And sometimes when I'm talking to a room of folks, I'll get a mom who snickers, usually an East Coast mom, you know, and she'll be like, oh, that don't sound too tough. But then I love that part because I have to break it down. We attract a very accomplished group, right? So our averages for our admitted students are up there, right? And I put them up there with most schools in, you know, in the country. But our average unweighted GPA, so on a 4.0 scale for the last several years, has been like a 3.85, 3.87, you know? And so the, you know, one of the pieces that's big in terms of the admission side of the academic piece of things is not only that GPA, but what did you take? Did you challenge yourself? How rigorous was your time at your school? Right? Because we, at each school, we know what's offered. So if you're looking at STEM areas for us, what's that math level? What's that science level? Right? Did you challenge yourself in the environment? If they have honors, AP, IB, did you take some of those? Right? And if they don't, then what do they offer? And how did you challenge yourself within that environment? We are test optional. And so, and truly test optional. So we'll consider students the same for admission for any type of funding, regardless of whether or not they submit a test score, SAT or ACT. But if they do, it's treated as additional information, right? Just more context. But I always do like to let folks know what our averages are for our admitted students, because they're pretty much the same as when we did require them, in part because now only the students who are in that range are sending those, you know. But about a 1470 on the SAT and a 33 on the ACT, right? So, I mean, that's the middle of the pack for us. And so it's an accomplished group in terms of the numbers that we see, but it's a holistic evaluation. So the personal side, essay, extracurriculars, all of that disinforms us in terms of who this student is, what are they going to bring to our campus, to our classroom environment, what kind of roommate they would be, that kind of thing.
This is your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the founder and CEO of Prep Expert. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. And I'm so excited to announce that Prep Expert is the official title sponsor of the College Admissions Process podcast. This has been a partnership in the works for a while now, and I'm so glad we got it off the ground. We're so excited to work with families, parents, students of the College Admissions Process podcast at Prep Expert to help them through our live online SAT and ACT courses, not only improve their SAT and ACT scores, but help them get into college as well as win hundreds of thousands of dollars in college scholarships. Thank you so much for the partnership, and we are so excited to work with your families.
Thank you, Sean. And to learn more about how Prep Expert can support your child's academic journey, visit prepexpert.com today, and best wishes to all. Well, there's so many great things that you touched upon. I want to break it down just a little bit. Number one, I appreciate that you talked about the national average in terms of admit rate. It's about 65 to 66%. You mentioned that at Santa Clara, it's somewhere in the mid to upper 40% range, which is terrific. I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of people are stressed with the process because they're applying to schools where the admit rate is 10% or less. So I don't care if you have a 4.0 unweighted average, you're the president of every single club, you wrote a book, you founded a club, you're one of those great, amazing kids. Anybody applying to a school where the admit rate is under 10%, it's a reach school for everyone. So I think in terms of helping lessen the stress, it's very important to, sure, go ahead and apply to the tough schools, but you got to have a balanced list. And the reason why I talked about your institutional priority in terms of how many you admit and how many applications you actually receive, I'm going to repeat it. You have 19 plus thousand applications for a freshman class of somewhere around 14 to 1500, right? And you mentioned there's also on top of that 200 to 300 transfer students. I mentioned that because with those numbers, 19,000 applications, where you're looking basically for an incoming class of 1500, I would guarantee that the first 30%, if you will, right, that are rejected, unfortunately, their profiles are probably not that different than the students that are admitted. Is that true, AJ? What, you know, anything you want to add to that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I always kind of tell folks, and I was not a math guy, so don't, you know.
Me neither, AJ.
Like a parabola or like the bell curve, you know. I would say for the majority of college application pools, you know, applicant pools, you know, you got that top 25 that they're getting into your school. They're getting in a lot of different schools just based on the number of their strong students. You got that bottom 25. Hopefully they have a backup, you know. You'd be surprised, or I think most families would be surprised, that 50%, there are so many students that look very similar academic, right? Sure. And you made a great point in terms of, you know, if a school's admitting 10%, that means they're denying 90%. That means it's a reach for everybody. It's nothing to bank on. Right. I mean, there's a lot of students, and that's really kind of what our job is to sort of suss out, okay, well, who's serious about coming if admitted, who's viable for this program, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of different factors that go into making a class aside from just the numbers, right? If it was just the numbers, we could run a algorithm and do this. But, you know, there are folks like me and yourself who help students, you know, figure this out, who, you know, it's more of an art than a science, you know?
Absolutely. I love that. It's more of an art than a science. And you mentioned the test optional nature of your review process. You also shared some really high numbers in terms of SAT averages and ACT averages. Of course, I want to warn that since you're test optional, students and parents, be mindful of the fact that the numbers are so high because only students that are scoring well are submitting. So to that point, can you share the percentage of students who were accepted at Santa Clara that did not submit standardized test scores? This is a question that's very important to a lot of students and their parents who still feel that the test optional nature of college admission is a myth.
Correct. Yeah. And what I'll say is, you know, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have those numbers specifically, but I can give you a range. And so, you know, I would say slightly over half of our pool decided not to submit scores, right? In terms of who was admitted, it was, you know, slightly over half of the students who did submit, right? So, you know, let's break that down a little bit, because in part, you know, test scores were really just, in my opinion, and I just rotated off of a national advising board for the College Board, right? The folks behind the SAT and AP. We have always known as a society, there's a stronger socioeconomic correlation to who does what on tests than there is anything in terms of race, culture, all that kind of stuff. If you have the resources to test again, to get test prep and all that, you're going to do better. We just know that, period. The pandemic really kind of forced universities to put their money where their mouth was, right? Prior to the pandemic, only about 10 to 12% of all those 2,000 plus four-year schools in the country were test optional, test free, some variation thereof. Now, because of the pandemic, because students could not physically sit and take it, it's closer to around 80%, right? So some schools, you know, are completely test optional. Some schools are test free. They don't look at them at all. UCs, for example, test free. Guess who still gets the most of any school system? You know, UCLA, because nobody believes it, right? To your point. And then some schools, you know, they're test optional for admission. But if you want to be considered for a merit-based scholarship, you need to have a test. So I tell students all the time, it's just, in my opinion, it's smarter and safer to just have a test in your back pocket. There's just, you know, take it at least once, right? The SAT, the ACT, have that in your back pocket so that you have the flexibility now and less pressure, you know, through that application process. If you have a score and a school requires it, you can send it. If they don't, you don't have to, right? So again, for us, in terms of our pool, the students who have those test scores were students who are probably coming from well-resourced backgrounds, and they're probably the same students who taken a bunch of APs and honors and all that kind of stuff, right? So they're still, you know, again, to me, the tests were just the leading socioeconomic factor in play. Now, with the removal of that, those socioeconomics are still there. You know what I mean? So it still plays out similar to what folks think.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, especially when you talked about the fact that Many schools are test optional. However, for merit-based scholarships, they may require them, right? So students, it's very important to always check the individual school's websites for the latest information in terms of that. And what I'll add is that a school might be test optional, but again, if you're applying to a specific major, something that's a little bit more competitive, such as engineering, nursing, again, check that website for the latest information to see if, in fact, you need to submit for those special programs. So let's dig a little deeper into the overall application review. AJ, what advice would you give to students to help their application stand out during the review process? And are there any common mistakes that you see that students should avoid when submitting their applications?
Sure. And good question, John. And one that, you know, we get quite often, which my answer is always, you know, especially to seniors, at this point, you've done what you can do. So, there, you know, there really is no magic or no secret serum I can give you, because the academics, at the end of the day, even though it's a holistic evaluation, the academics are going to carry the day. They're going to carry the weight in terms of, are you a viable applicant? Are you in the ballpark, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the personal side, really, and you know, we get asked to do, you know, we being admission counselors and all that, always get asked to do essay workshops and, you know, talk about the reality is, as I tell folks all the time, you're not getting into Harvard with a 1.8 GPA because your essay was awesome, right? And so, right. So again, the essay really just, it gives us flavor into who you are. You know, we're a Common App school. The Common App has six different prompts. You know, write about an influential person or event or something like that in your life. I love it when students choose the last option, which is just write about any topic you can think of. We live in 2024. It's a crazy world out there. There's so much going on. If you can't find something interesting to talk about, what are you doing? You know? And so, you know, I don't think there's as much, there should be as much stress or pressure that we put on essays as we do. But that said, as a student, if you're serious about going to school, it's probably the most important piece of writing you're going to do to this point.
Right.
So take it seriously, right? Spell check, get other folks to read it. You know, there's being brave and talking about different topics and all that kind of stuff. There's also going too far, you know? So it's important to not rush this process, have fun with it. Again, we're looking for who you are as an individual, what you're going to bring to a campus community, to a roommate situation, to the class conversation, all of that is that flavoring that when universities say they're looking for diversity, that's not just racial. That's not just ethnic. That's everything you can think of, right? I kind of always used to say, if everybody likes Cheetos, somebody got to like Doritos, right? Like spice up the conversation, you know? So.
Well, I appreciate that. I love the honesty, right? You're talking about the essay and you said it gives you flavor, right? In the admissions office in terms of who the student is. But at the end of the day, the number one thing that you're looking at are those academics, right? Because you're looking at the transcript, and correct me if I'm wrong, AJ, you want to make sure that if you admit a student, he or she can handle the work once they're on your campus. Right. And so they need to demonstrate that they're able to do it based on what they did over 4 years, the ramps that they built, what was available to them, what courses did they select, how did they do in those courses, again, so that you as an admissions professional could review that transcript and determine whether or not that youngster could handle the work once they're at Santa Clara. So speaking of the transcript, AJ, do you use the student's high school GPA as indicated on that transcript, or do you recalculate the GPA using your own metrics? And if so, what do you look at from a student's academic record, and how do you evaluate them?
Sure. Yeah, so it's important to remember, especially when you're talking about, you know, national schools, regional schools, you know, that kind of thing, is that if it's a national school, they receive applications from all over the country, all over the globe, that kind of thing. So we receive applications from upwards of 3,000 high schools, right? Domestically, internationally, right. All of that. And so we have to recalculate most GPAs. In the state of California, most public schools will have an unweighted GPA on their transcript. But even that can be a little tricky, right? Sometimes sure. It's only academic or something. And I'll say also, generally speaking, most private institutions are going to look at your high school career from ninth grade through 12th grade.
Right.
Here in California, the public systems, the UCs and CSUs, they're starting to calculate a GPA at sophomore year up. So, you know, what I tell students is that the minute you step in onto a high school campus, it matters what you do, in part because if you're not a strong student freshman year, you're not going to all of a sudden turn it around or turn it on sophomore year. So we look at, you know, the grade trend freshman through. We also look at, again, how rigorous a student's time was. So does that start to ramp up? At most schools, if they offer honors, AP, that kind of thing, your first and second year, generally speaking, you're going to have access to sort of honors courses, you know, that build you up to that, you know, or pre-IB and that kind of stuff that builds you up to, you know, the access there. So you want to see a progressive trend of challenge. Senior year matters. You know, don't take senior year off, right? In terms of either the kind of courses you take or how you perform, you know, and so we look at all of that. I will say in terms of trends, you know, students usually are either, well, there's only really kind of three ways you can go. Students are either going to be consistently strong or on an upward trend, you know, or if there was a dip somewhere, you know, hopefully that student, you know, rebounds, right? But universities always want to see a student, if they're not on a consistently, you know, strong, if they haven't consistently always just been a strong student, on an upward trend. You never want to catch somebody on a downward trend, because to your point earlier, we want to feel confident that the individual is in a good place academically, mentally, socially, whatever, to come in and be successful on your campus, right? And that's in the classroom, that's outside the classroom, all of that. You know, and that's kind of leads me to sort of like mental health concerns and everything that, you know, learning differences and all of that, which is a growing, you know, phenomenon on all campuses and in society in general. That's, you know, life happens. But again, we need to feel confident that a student is in a good space to come in into our campus and be successful. I tell students all the time, if you're not a genius going into college, you're not going to be a genius coming out. You know, in my opinion, you know, college is much more than just that piece of paper at the end or the grades that you get, the classes you took. It's an experience. It's an experience. You know, you're going to meet people, new people, do new things, go new places, have all these experiences, you know, question yourself, be challenged, all of that. It's an experience that I think most folks, you know, who go through it are better for, you know, after having gone through it. And so, again, given that, we have to feel confident that any individual can come in and be successful.
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, I have to mention there's over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States alone. There's definitely students, multiple schools for you, but not every school is necessarily for you. So, you know, do your research, look at the academics, look at the social aspect, look at the graduation rates, the retention rates to find that fit for you. And I also appreciate how you talked about your holistic review when looking at the transcript. And it is clear that you guys are really mindful of making sure that you're selecting the right students that are not only going to be successful on your campus, but thrive. And that, of course, what makes up this great Santa Clara community, again, with your 93% retention rate and also your very high graduation rate. Now, I know we touched upon the personal essay earlier, but I just want to unpackage it a little bit more. AJ, can you share an example of an essay that really stuck with you? And what advice, and I know you gave some already, but what other advice would you give students in terms of what to avoid when working on their essays?
Sure. So one that, and by the way, every cycle, every year I've been doing this, I've saved great essays. Right? just for my own personal, this kid knocked it out the park. This was awesome. If I ever do a workshop, essay workshop, sometimes I'll share that, redacting information, obviously. But one that really stands out was years ago. So, you know, we're in an area where, you know, certain parts of town, any institution, everywhere, any city, you know, there's different areas that have certain reputations and all that kind of stuff. I was reading an application from a student from an area around here, at least, that didn't have the best reputation. And we don't always, most transcripts, I would say, don't have pictures on them, right? Mm-hmm. This one did. And looking at it, I saw a young Hispanic male who looked, you know, shaved head. And I was like, oh, man, OK, all right. You know, he looked like he could probably get into some stuff. And so, you know, having that sort of mental picture already and then going into his essay, it was awesome because he said, people see me and I feel like an artifact in a museum. Wow. People see me and they stare at me like I'm behind, you know, glass and all that, but they don't know there's so many layers to me and I want to be an I want to be an author. And it was just a beautifully, beautifully crafted essay that spoke to who he was in terms of sort of any preconceived notions you might have from seeing that picture of him. Sure. Or knowing from where he's from, that kind of thing. It was beautiful and I loved it and made a note to reach out to him, you know, after the application process and just say, hey man, like I read your essay. It was awesome. I wish you the best. He ended up coming here. He went to, he was an English major. Not sure what he's up to now, but I was very happy that it worked out for him. That was a good one. There was one a few years after that from a young man out in, I think the DC area, Washington DC, who grew up in a, you know, predominantly, you know, right-leaning family, if you will. Mm-hmm. He didn't really agree with a lot of what was going on at the you know, Thanksgiving dinner table, all that kind of stuff. But he talked about being respectful of the differing opinions in the household, and they were different from his values, but he could hear his folks out because they were family and he could have, you know, civil conversation with them. You know, I think he might even, you know, on the, you know, sexuality spectrum, you know, just mm-hmm. not really vibed with his family. And so mm-hmm. That one was really cool, really powerful as well. So, yeah. So, I mean, there's students, you know, always ask, what should we write about? What can I write about? You can write about anything as long as right. you write about it well, you know, right. and we love that. We love when students are brave enough to put themselves out there and just and really kind of talk about what they're interested in, what makes them tick, that kind of thing. You know, so my previous institution, University of Puget Sound, which is my alma mater, small school, right? So we would do much more of the sort of committee review and that kind of thing. And in that environment, we definitely, you know, an essay and that personal piece, there was much more of that sort of, I'm going to fight for this student because of, of this. In the nature of, and with the volume of applications that we see, there's really not too much of that. But in our notes section, we could definitely say, no, this is, you know, a standout. We should take a chance on this one, that kind of thing. And so the essay and the personal side and the additional information section, all of that is really where a student should let us know everything that they can about themselves.
Yeah, well, I appreciate those insights and those examples. You know, the student that you actually reached out to must have been thrilled to hear from an admissions rep that, hey, you know, you did a great job on your essay. You know, congratulations. But I also like the fact that you talk about it's not so much the importance of the topic that you choose, because there's so many topics that you can choose. But it's really, how do you take that topic, students, and give insight in terms of who you are, your thought process? You know, maybe there's a bump in the road. How did you pivot? You know, how did you come back? Show your grit, whatever it is, but really give insight, give flavor, right? As you mentioned earlier, in terms of who the student is as a person. Now, AJ, I know that Santa Clara also requires supplemental essays. So what are you looking for in those supplementals that are not available in other parts of the overall application?
Sure. Well, in the supplemental piece, you know, and again, you know, being a Common App school, I think there's close to 900 institutions that utilize the Common App. So students, very important that on those general essays, right. you don't mention a specific university, right? Because that goes to all of them. Again, check your work. But in the supplementals, it's where universities will allow you to be more specific to why are you looking at this particular school, that kind right. of thing. So I think our first question is, you know, pretty standard, although I will say after the SCOTUS decision, right. we, like a lot of different schools, try to go about things a little bit differently and get to sort of who is this student that we're looking at. I'll back that up just to say that context, that's what this entire process on our end is about, trying to get context of who this individual is in the 17 to 20 pages of an application and with transcripts and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, ours, I really like, I think our second question, which essentially is, hey, we're a Jesuit institution and the Jesuits, you know, are founded in these sort of concepts of social justice, doing for others, that kind of thing. That's what we care about. What do you care about? How can you marry those two things in a Santa Clara experience and go out and make a difference in the world, right? And so, John, I've read some of the most awesome responses that have literally touched on essays and topics that touch on everything under the sun, right? Mm-hmm. And no topic is taboo in that sense. Students really feel brave and empowered, you know, by that. And I love it. And so that's been great. And I do want to, just because I mentioned it with the Supreme Court decision and all that, sure. You know, when that happened, we went on the offensive. Universities in general, I think, went on offensive that could or that felt comfortable to do that. And going out and telling students, no, you can still tell us who you are.
Right.
Right. The whole checkbox notion that's the case centered on, universities weren't admitting and, you know, admitting Black and brown students because they were simply Black and brown, or denying Asian students because they're Asian. That was just one piece of the entire complex, you know, context that we were trying to gain. So with that part of it being gone now legally, you know, you can't look at that piece. The loophole is that you can still tell us who you are. You can still give us a narrative of what your experience has been. And so we really try to go out there and just tell students, let us know who you are. And everybody has, right? And so I think the word is out there. But again, if you don't know that you can do that and you don't tell us who you are, we can't guess. Yeah, with the supplemental pieces, one, students shouldn't freak out about those because they're not essays. They're not that long. But they're a great opportunity for you to tell a university, this is why I'm looking at you in particular. I've done my research. I'm looking forward to some of the experiences that you offer. But also, here are my bigger plans, right? Here's what I want to do after you. And here's why you would be lucky to have me, because this is what I plan to do, right? That kind of thing. So yeah, have some fun with that.
Well, I appreciate that answer. You talk about, of course, the supplementals are more specific as to why a student, for example, would want to attend Santa Clara. You want to know who the individual is, but did they demonstrate their understanding of your institution? And it goes back to what I was saying earlier in terms of demonstrating your interest, doing your research. So, for example, you mentioned if a student is able to look at your mission statement, right, which is something that is very near and dear to the institution. You have the Jesuit philosophy. You want to know, what does the student care about? And in their supplemental essay, for example, are they able to marry the two so that they show their values, who they are as a person, why they see themselves at Santa Clara? How do they see themselves contribute to this beautiful thing we call Santa Clara University? And to your point, you know, showing off that they're not done yet, right? What do they intend to do even beyond Santa Clara? So did I hit the nail on the head on that or no, AJ?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, sure. Because I think it's very important for students to understand that nuance that, you know, the supplemental is just that, demonstrating your understanding of the institution, looking at their mission statement, their philosophy, how does it align with your values? How do you see yourself at the school? Frankly, how are you going to make it better? I think if you're able to do that in those, you know, the supplementals are very short, but if you're able to do that, I think it'll definitely, you know, help you with that part of the application. So, AJ, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Before I get to the last question, I just have to ask, is there a question that I didn't ask or a topic that I simply didn't bring up yet that you'd like to share with us now?
No, I think, you know, yeah, we hit it on the head in terms of sort of, covering Santa Clara in general, and I think we, you know, took it broader than that. What one thing I'll say, John, and I think especially as we start to talk about costs, right, and rising costs of college and education and all of that, and this sort of idea that's floating out there and gaining traction, and some of it's political, some of it's just cultural, some of it's the reality of how much college can cost and all of that. But just in terms of the question of the necessity of going to school, the necessity of being educated or going to college. And, you know, there's a little equation I came up with a while back, and it says education plus time equals dollar signs, right? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is the more educated you are, the more likely you are to be compensated as such. One, going to college isn't for everybody. Let's just get that out there, right? Mm-hmm. Some folks just don't, you know, do well in school and they find success in other ways. That's totally fine. I do think, however, folks should be educated in whatever they do. If you're going to be a plumber, be educated about that. You're going to be in the trades, whatever, real estate, the same thing. So I think, you know, society as a whole, we need to do a better job of making sure that in the K-12 system, at least, we give everybody the chance that when they're done that senior year, they have the ability to go to college. They've done the work. The system has put them in a place to where they have the option of going to college. All that said, so I think, you know, education is important. And to my point earlier, it ain't just about going to college to get the degree and get the job. Your worldview hopefully will improve. Your network will definitely improve, right? I was a first generation college student, all that. Know about occupations that exist now that I had no clue existed, right? Right. My network is 10 times what it could have been because I went to college, right? And so, I just want to leave folks with that to anybody who's questioning if I should even go. You should. Yeah, you should, for a lot of different reasons, but be smart about how you do it. Be smart about the loan that you take on, that kind of thing. Oh, one last thing I'll mention is, sure, we didn't talk too much about transferring, but I always like to let folks know that transferring is a much more useful and utilized process than folks give it credit for, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned, 4,000 colleges and universities, about half of those are community colleges, right? Right. So, 33% of all college students in the country attend a two-year school. Mm-hmm. And about, 38% of all college students, period, will transfer at some point, whether that's from a two-year to a four-year, or a four-year to a four-year, or a four-year back to a two-year because things didn't go too well for whatever reason. Hmm. Right? And then hopefully they can make it back to a four-year. So, for a lot of different reasons, folks transfer, be smart about it, right? Right. And just, have a plan. Should you go the two-year route to make sure that you get out of that two-year and move on to whatever, whether it's a certificate program or a four-year school, you have to go into a two-year with a plan.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's sad though, right, that you talked about that thing called cost, right? Because it's been so much more expensive to attend colleges. And that question that people are asking, is it necessary? And, I always say, yes, the cost of college is very expensive, but the cost of not having any education is even more expensive, right? So to your point, if you're into the vocations, that's great. You want to be a plumber, be the best plumber that you can be. You want to be a doctor, be the best doctor that you can be. You want to be a teacher, whatever it is that you want to do. And I'm going to share that, like you, I'm a first generation college student, first person in my family to actually attend college. My first year, I was actually at a two-year school. It was a two-year state school. It certainly helped me with saving money. I ultimately transferred to a four-year state school, got my bachelor's, and eventually got my doctorate. But my point is that that's what I needed to do for me. I certainly couldn't afford to do private schools, so I did the state school thing. I started in a two-year school. So it's not so much where you start, how you start, it's how you finish, students. So, again, 4,000 colleges and universities out there. It's a shame that, the cost has become so prohibitive in so many cases, but there are ways around it. There are more affordable options. So you just have to be smart about the entire process. So AJ, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I really can't thank you enough. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are the top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents going through the college admissions process? And by the way, you've already offered a ton of information and advice, but what are your top three?
Sure. One I would say is just to get out and visit as many schools as you can, right? In the different sort of sectors that I mentioned, right? Small, medium, large. There's a good chance that wherever you live, within a couple minutes to a few hours, you probably have an example of either a big state school or a medium-sized school or a small school. So, take that effort, do that. Do your research. Again, we live in amazing times. And so, Google what you want to know. Most public systems in most states will tell you the base requirements for entry into their campuses. Private schools tend to deal, generally speaking, more with averages and recommendations and things like that. So don't stress out about this process as much as we're prone to. Don't mess around with deadlines. You know, deadlines are the last day that you can do something. There's no penalty for doing things ahead of that, you know. And I'll say it too, especially if you're dealing with state schools and impacted campuses, mess around and miss a deadline. Your application's gone, you know. So, just put yourself in the best position possible. You know, do your pregame, do your research and all that. But have fun through this process, because hopefully you're going to find a place. And what I'll say too, a lot of times folks get fixated on school A or B, right? X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, wherever you end up, it's probably where you should have been anyway.
That's great advice. Absolutely. Wherever you end up is exactly where you should have been. And I want to repeat two things that you mentioned. Obviously, visiting schools, sometimes it's difficult, right? Especially if you're trying to visit a school that's in session and perhaps it's out of state. It might be a financial reason why it's not so simple to visit. But if money is not the issue, sometimes it's just, you know, scheduling everybody's calendar. You know, parents are working, students are in school and what have you. So great advice in terms of visit a school that's close to home. Whether you intend to go to that school or not, it doesn't matter, because when you visit a college campus, you start to get that feel, right? Exactly to your point. Do I want the big school, the small school, or the medium-sized school? So I appreciate that insight. And I also love that you said there's no penalty when you submit something well before that deadline. So that's great advice. This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for your time and expertise today.
John, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Our pleasure. And to everyone out there, thank you so much for listening, and good luck to you all with the college search. Take care, all, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Hey, podcast friends, if you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process Podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process.